How to scale as a landlord. This could really help you with your buy and hold real estate. That's today's show. Let's dive into it. Hey everyone, I'm Clayton Morris. I've got a head cold, so please forgive me. We've got a special guest on the show today. We're going to talk about at what point do you decide to maybe open up your own property management company and to scale yourself as a buy and hold real estate investor. But before we get to our special guest today, I want to remind you that this is a show where we help you build financial intelligence. So if you're subscribing or watching for the very first time, thank you so much. You can go back and check out all of the archives here because we really try to teach you the tax benefits of owning real estate. We do it through buy and hold real estate with single family properties. That's how we've achieved financial freedom. But there's a whole treasure trove of information here for you to go out there and take action. And guess what? It's all free. It's all free for you. Also, if you want to download our free cheat sheet, we've got a 3-page PDF. It's totally free. I don't talk about it enough, and I should, but you can go to morrisinvest.com/freedom. It's 3 pages. It will help you figure out what your financial freedom number is all about. It is the number that helped change our lives and our family, and I hope it will do the same for you. All right, I mentioned a special guest on the show today. His name is Sean Morrissey, and by the way, I love the last name, Morrissey, but also one of my favorite singers. I'm sure he doesn't get that a lot. He's up in the Chicagoland area. He now manages over 200 properties. He personally has over 51 units in his own personal portfolio, and there was a moment, I guess, in Sean's life where he decided, you know what? I'm going to start managing my own properties and scale my business that way. Sean, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Clayton.
Well, it's a real pleasure to have you here up in the Chicagoland area. So take us back a little bit before we talk about, you know, scaling as a landlord and what that would even look like. How did you get started in real estate investing? Did you start out as a real estate agent?
No, I actually started out as, I guess what I'd call a wannabe landlord. I was very fortunate that back in, it was roughly summer of 2001, my dad took me out to dinner one night and said, son, here's a book I want to give you. It's basically how to use real estate as a tax shelter. I kind of dug into that, got involved in some different real estate investment clubs here locally in the Chicagoland area, and decided to purchase my first property summer of 2003.
Wow, that's great. So a wannabe landlord, I like that term. How would you define wannabe landlord? You kind of you hear all the benefits of real estate, you jump into it, but you really don't know what you're doing?
Yeah. I think that's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it too is, what you hear quite often, which is the analysis by paralysis type of phrase, where ultimately you can get buried in all sorts of books and stories of awful evictions and how people can destroy your property. And, I ultimately had to find my own personal balance in regards to how I was going to make that work for me and when to pull the trigger. So it took me about 18 months, but, finally got going and have been building a portfolio from there.
Amazing. So, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I try to remind people that in real estate investing, you will have problems. We just released an episode with Ken McElroy where we talked about the problems you will face. You're going to have problems. Here, the key is to not freak out. You're building a business. It's an amazing tax shelter. You're going to have an eviction. You're going to have a contractor that burns you. You're going to have a roofer that doesn't do the job they were paid to do. It's going to happen. As long as you can build it into your business, you can realize you can use that as a write-off. You can offset some of your other income. But real estate is the number one way to build wealth. I'm curious what your dad talked to you about that night at dinner. Can you give me some insights in how he laid that out for you?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, that particular conversation had to deal with the tax advantages of owning investment real estate. Even my father wasn't really so much aware of the fact that there were other ways in which you build wealth through buy and hold real estate, which is, the appreciation factor, the principal pay down, and the rental cash flows. And frankly, I was too naive to that point up until a few years ago to realize that, frankly, the advantage of real estate through investment is that it provides, multiple forms of wealth building, not just one. So that's ultimately what I've come to learn just in the last couple of years, which has made me even more attracted to buy and hold real estate over the course of time.
Well, one thing I want our audience to take away from something you said, and something I really try to beat this drum on a regular basis, is take action, right? You took imperfect action at the beginning. You didn't have all the answers. You weren't sitting around with analysis paralysis, waiting for someone to give you a silver platter with the perfect real estate experience on a silver platter, which doesn't exist, by the way. And then you went out to local real estate meetup groups. It's something I talk about here on the show all the time, that every area has meetups. You can just go to meetup.com and look for your local REIA meetups. And they usually meet once a month. Might be a $20 cover charge to get in. They might get you one drink at the bar. Get a name tag, write your name on it, and start to network and have discussions about real estate. So that was really important for you at the beginning, networking, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And picking the brains of those people that have more experience than you, because at the end of the day, that's how you're really going to get, boots on the ground knowledge, is talking to those people that are working in your marketplace and pulling from the experiences that they have more than anything.
So let's talk about that first deal, that first property. Take us back. What did it look like? How did you find it? Did the numbers make sense? And what mistakes did you make?
Yeah, it's kind of funny looking back at that one, because it really wasn't a very good deal. It's what I would call to be a traditional retail transaction. So back at that time, it was going to be my first home I had ever purchased, right? So I was fortunate enough to use a first-time homebuyer program where ultimately I was able to put a low down payment. I was able to get a favorable interest rate, actually got a grant from the county to assist in buying it. And it was $120,000. It was a 2-bedroom, 1-bath condo. I still own it to this day. And nothing really exciting about it. The numbers just worked, so that ultimately it provided cash flow on a month-to-month basis. But if you'd like me to dive in, I'd say the first few years of that particular condo, as you can imagine, from what, 03 to 07, where anybody with a heartbeat could buy a home, I ran into some tough times with tenants, and that's really where I got my experience through evictions and whatnot.
Yeah, so let's talk about the cash flow on that. What was the rent then? What is it now? And how much of a vacancy did you end up having to deal with back then? Because everyone could get a loan, even people without jobs, and no income, no job, ninja loans, right?
Yep, you got it. So yeah, back in those days, I want to say for that 2-bedroom, 1-bath, I was getting $870 a month. You know, these days I'm getting $995 a month, and I could frankly do better than that. But the rate in which I'm at in my career, I'm really looking for stabilization of tenant and quality tenant over cash flow. So I've earned $125 more than I used to in small increments. I've been fortunate enough to have the same tenant 6-7 years, but you can imagine I probably would have the same tenant for 6-7 years with a rent that's lower than market value at these days.
Right. What about an HOA? Do you have a homeowners association on a condo?
Yep, there is a small HOA. The advantage of homeowners associations in some regard is they'll ideally take care of everything from the drywall out, right? All your exterior maintenance and things of that nature. So it's one less headache for a landlord to have. But as you're well aware, you need to make sure that particular homeowners association is healthy and stable and ultimately has the financial stability to cover some capital expenditures down the road.
Yeah, everyone can check out our video that we did on homeowners associations and my experience with them in Florida. I bought a property, moved in, and then as soon as I moved in, there was a special assessment where they had to do all the roofs and all of that. So I had to come out of pocket to cover all of that. And you just really want to make sure your homeowners association will allow you to rent the property, because they can change that as well. They might be able to grandfather you in, but a lot of them have been moving to, no Airbnbs, no rentals. There has to be a certain percentage of ownership and so forth. So it can be a little bit of a headache, but it sounds like you lucked out with this particular one.
Yeah, certainly staying involved in the homeowner association is fairly, fairly important too, just because of the fact that you can know firsthand what's being discussed. And to your point of, rentals potentially being barred from an association, at least you'll be able to take action or have a loud enough voice to let the folks know what your feelings are in that particular matter.
So today we wanted to talk about scaling your buy and hold portfolio and getting to the point when you're going to, how you evolve as a landlord. So it sounds like in the early days, like all of us, you made some mistakes. You had to deal with a bunch of evictions. You did some things maybe at the early stages you wouldn't do today. How did you get to that second property, and when did you start to evolve as a landlord?
Yeah, so my second property was about a year after my first. It would have been July of 2004. And, this day and age, they tend to call it house hacking. But in essence, what I did is I bought a big 4-bedroom, 2-bath home. I lived in one of the bedrooms and I rented out the rest. Really? And that type of model provides some great cash flow. at the same time, it also provides an interesting perspective anytime someone is in the shower or flushes the toilet too many times, because you're the one paying the utilities. So it was an interesting experience. Did that for about 3 years, and ultimately have rented that house out as a single family home to this day. Ultimately I bought one in 2004, bought again in 2007, and then in 2008. And, you know, initially my goal was to buy 10 properties in 10 years. And by 2008, as you can imagine, I had a hard enough time wondering if I was going to get out from under these properties, much less have the cash flow to cover any capital expenditures. Fortunately, I was able to do all that. I was able to get through the market, but it wasn't until roughly 2012 before I was able to continue scaling, primarily because of market downturn, banks were tight. And it was at that point, really in 2007, that I got into real estate agency with the intent that it would make me a better investor. And I'd say initially it did not, because the market was tight, but it gave me some opportunities to really scale my agency business and dive into property management third party for other landlords and homeowners in the Chicagoland area.
So talk to me about that moment, because that's an important moment. So you had your own properties, you're dealing with the market at the time. Then you go into the agency side, we're going to start to manage properties for other people. What did you learn from managing properties for other people that enabled you to sort of cater your own properties?
Oh, one of my greatest blessings in life was the fact that I made that decision to manage for other people. And, you know, what I would say it contributed to was back in 2007, when I decided to get my real estate license, homes weren't selling, at least on the retail scale. Ultimately, you know, you had to get into the short sale game or the foreclosure game in regards to listing properties to generate commission income. So what I did is I took my landlord experience, which, you know, was what, 3-4 years at that point. I ultimately took my experience from being involved in different real estate investment clubs in the Chicagoland area. And I decided to help folks rent their properties that couldn't sell at that time. So naturally, there were a lot of homeowners underwater in the Chicagoland area, folks that needed to take a job relocation, but couldn't figure out what they were going to do with their home. And ultimately, we began by renting those properties. That eventually led to property management back in early 2010. And really, to answer your question, Clayton, what I learned was ultimately by having a third-party property management platform, I was able to refine my own landlording skills and refine my own property management systems so that today I don't necessarily contract that property management out. I keep it in-house and basically, you know, I suppose one hand scratches the other's back, right? The third-party property management manages my own properties, and by having my own properties, it provides me passive income. So it's a blessing.
Today's episode is brought to you by SimpliSafe, my favorite home security system. Now, listen to this. I'm actually standing by my keypad right now. I thought I'd do a little guerrilla journalism so you can hear how simple this is and how easy it was to set up. So I got the keypad here. I'm going to play a little keypad here, right? So I'm going to say I'm away. Okay. Please exit now. I've got 59 seconds to do this. Okay. So it's going to start beeping a little louder, a little faster. I leave, right? I lock the door and then the house is secure. Now I'm going to turn it off. Okay, now I can set it for a home, away, and I can even set it remotely right from my iPhone app. So then if I forgot to turn on the alarm. Guess it doesn't matter. I just go right into the SimpliSafe app and I'm able to arm my system while I'm away. So you can set it up and customize it however you want. So here in the house, I've got the camera set up, the motion camera. I've got the motion sensors up in the corner, and you can add all sorts of extra things as well. You can add things to the windows, so the breaking mechanisms to test and hear if someone breaks your window. And SimpliSafe is so amazing, the team at SimpliSafe, that they actually distinguish the sound of breaking glass. Like if you drop a glass in the kitchen, it's not going to activate. But they will know the difference if someone breaks a window. That's how they've tested it in their labs. They're so smart. And it's so simple to set up. You don't have to run wires. You don't have to do all sorts of stuff. You get it right out of the box and you connect right over the internet. It's super simple to do. You can put your keypad right with that adhesive sticky anywhere you want. So you don't have to drill holes in the wall or any of that. It's super simple. I love it. SimpliSafe sensors will protect every point of access to your home, your doors, your windows, garage, you name it. So here's something interesting. I didn't know this. Studies show that security systems deter burglars. Is that it's a fact, but there's still a burglary every 8 seconds in America. So how? Well, think about it. So do burglars just give up because some houses have security systems? Of course not. They just find a house that isn't protected. That's why securing your home is a true necessity. So I'm telling you, you've got to check out our friends over at SimpliSafe. And they'll never lock you into a long-term contract. That's amazing. So I go with the only home security system I trust, SimpliSafe, by going to simplisafe.com/investing. So today, you're going to get free shipping and a 60-day money-back guarantee. So try it. You know, if you don't like it, then send it back. So you get free shipping and 60-day money-back guarantee. That's simplisafe.com/investing for the home security that I trust. simplisafe.com/investing.
Please exit now.
Okay, I'm leaving.
Alarm off.
So if someone's watching, they've got 15 properties. At what point, or 10 properties, at what point do you say, hey, it might be smarter for you to start managing your properties? There's a lot of things to take into account there, right? Because number one, they've all probably got to be in your own backyard. If you're going to be a property manager, you've probably got to be nearby, right? So what are some of the things that you would go into that calculus?
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to throw a property figure at it, right? Like 10 properties. I mean, in my mind, for me personally, if I had a full-time job, if this was a secondary source of income, I'd say right between that 5 and 10 property point, you're going to want to hand it off. But I think it's very important, really, for anybody starting out at a local level to get involved as a landlord firsthand. Because ultimately, it's those experiences you have over those first few years of those first few properties that will kind of embed you to hold your property manager more accountable. If you were to just buy 5 properties, hand it off to a property manager tomorrow, you may not necessarily know that you should be following up with them, you know, the 10th of each month to see if a 5-day notice has been filed for unpaid rent, or, you know, how often they're inspecting the property, or, you know, ultimately the fact that you're supposed to get a 1099 for rents collected, things of that nature. So it would be, it would behoove you to basically get involved at a grassroots level, in my opinion. And then ultimately, as your time becomes more constrained, hand that off to a property management company that naturally has a good reputation in the area, but ultimately one that you're going to work with well from a communication standpoint.
Right.
And someone that you actually like, you know, someone that's actually not become cynical in the business by having too many bridges burned by tenants or by landlords over time. Because that I found tends to happen to a lot of property managers in the business. It's a rough game, naturally, because you're dealing with folks that want things fixed tomorrow or don't have the money to pay for them, perhaps from a landlord perspective. So you just want to make sure you're involved with somebody that likes what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough business. And to me, it's kind of a thankless business. So I guess that's part of my questioning of, you know, you decide to go in this route, but it's also a business. So you can actually make it profitable. At what point, though, I've heard stories, because I made the mistake of starting my own property management company a couple of years ago. And it was because we were dealing with a really bad actor in one of our markets that was lying to us. It was doing some really bad things. So we thought, well, maybe we can take some overflow, get people away from them, you know, in any capacity. And we just took on too many people. And we ended up having to go with like a large national company that kind of took over and was able to get things straightened out. But it was not easy. At what point do you become profitable? I've heard you need like 150 doors as a manager before you can really, you know, start to make some money and also cover your expenses and hire additional staff, boots on the ground. Can you talk about some of the numbers?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's really changed over the last, let's say, 10 years in property management, as in so many other industries, is that technology has really helped streamline some of the workflow to make things cheaper, faster, more affordable. So, you know, if there were a landlord out there that were to say that I wanted to start up a property management business here in 2019, the first place I would start is, you know, ultimately look at what technological systems are out there right now when it comes to property management software. Repair hotlines. There's plenty of 24-hour repair hotlines you can use at a pretty affordable dollar. Inspection software, you know, different ways in which you can streamline your rent collection process to make it easier on the tenant, to get the landlord paid quicker, to get the notices out. If you can figure out those things, I feel like you could probably manage about 50 doors and say you're being profitable at a somewhat comfortable level, in my opinion. And I know that number is probably low, but ultimately, let's say 50. And at the same time, too, it's very important from a property manager perspective that you just don't take anybody and their brother on, right? You want to see the property that you're taking on, get a good feel for the landlord, get a good feel for how they're treating that property, because the time that that property pulls from you is ultimately money out of your pocket as the property manager. So it's one of those things where you want to discriminate on the kind of properties you take in, and at the same time, build the systems in place that you can scale from, but at the same time, use the technological advances out there these days to leverage that.
So maybe you can give us some insight from the other side, from behind the curtain as a property manager. The types of questions that our audience should ask a property manager that they're thinking about hiring. So maybe they own 5 properties in Phoenix, or they own 10 properties in Dallas, or who cares, right? If you're looking at different property managers that you're going to work with, I know that we vet a lot of our property managers and we want to take them through a list of questions, make sure that they can do all of these things. We test them out, et cetera. What are some things that people should ask of their property manager and expect? Let me give you one as a starter. Communication. How quickly should we expect a property manager to respond to a question?
Well, in my personal opinion, if you'd like me to answer
that. Yeah, I'd love it. I think
okay. So in my personal experience, my preference is to have, as a property manager, the majority of correspondence be via email. And there's a primary reason I say that. And that's because, let's say, P-trap under a kitchen sink is leaking, right? And we send somebody out there to fix it, and a month later it happens again. At least I've got that email correspondence or that work order flow through the management software so that I can fall back on that and refresh my memory to say, all right, here's what happened, here's what was said, here's what was done. So communication is always very important via email from a property manager perspective. Now, how quickly they should respond? Boy, I mean, it's going to depend on the urgency of the issue, I suppose, right? So if somebody has a dishwasher that ultimately doesn't work anymore, well, we don't consider that to be an emergency. But if the heat's out in the dead of winter, well, that's an emergency, and that requires immediate correspondence. So it's really going to vary based on the level of urgency to anything and from a property manager's perspective. Now, your other question was basically in reference to what questions a landlord should ask a property manager. And, I think for anybody that's investing either in an inner market, in their market, or outside of their market, the first thing they want to ask is questions in relations to boots on the ground. You had mentioned earlier that there's a national property management provider that you ended up working with to assist with your inventory. And, I've seen the same thing here in our market. In the last couple of years, a lot of national providers have popped up. And ultimately, because of the scale they have, they can provide fantastic management fees, a low fee. You get the same quality, the same services, right? But not necessarily the same quality of service. So what I mean by that is, let's say, here in the Chicagoland area, there might be a company out of Michigan. And sure, they can handle rent collection, and they've got one contractor that they work with at a local level to handle all their work orders within a 50-mile radius. And in theory, that sounds great. But there are times in which you need somebody to show up at the house or ultimately meet the vendor at the house or handle a city inspection, things of that nature. And it's those things I find the national providers don't necessarily do well. Outside of that, ultimately, I love to find a property manager that invests in buy and hold real estate themselves, that shows that they've actually got some skin in the game, that they practice what they preach. That's always very important to me. And then I like to look into the systems that they have in place right now. So what property management software are they providing? What do they consider to be an emergency versus a non-emergency? How does their repair hotline system work? Is it 24 hours? How often do they inspect the property, and are they using a preferred inspection software? There's a series of questions that we could certainly go through, but I'd say in terms of major points, those are the ones that I would look for from a landlord perspective.
No, those are perfect. Well, Sean, it's been great having you here on the show. What's next for you and your business? You're managing over 200 doors right now. You personally have over 51 units, 29 buildings themselves. Where are you taking your personal portfolio and where do you plan to take your business?
Yeah, so I've been doing more property management consulting here locally, assisting local businesses and trying to scale their property management portfolio for third-party landlords. At the same time, too, I am still focusing on building my own portfolio. I mean, I was blessed enough this year to hit, you know, 3 times my financial freedom number, so, you know, essentially expenses. So I'd like to scale that one more time and then, you know, make some decisions in regards to where I'll take it. But, you know, I'm a huge proponent of, you know, naturally buy and hold real estate. I don't tend to focus on syndication so much these days because I don't like to necessarily stretch myself too thin, I suppose. But yeah, it's really those two avenues that I've focused on and a business and income stream, I suppose.
Perfect. And if someone wants to get a hold of you for property management, they want Sean to manage their property, how can people connect with you?
Yeah, feel free to visit our website. It's chicago-realty-group.com. Chicagoland Realty Group Partners is the name of the property management company here in downtown Aurora. And I would be happy to assist anybody that's, you know, either looking to get started and just wanted to bounce some questions off me or looking to get into property management down the road. Happy to help.
Wonderful. Sean, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Clayton.
And thanks to all of you for subscribing. And, you know, please, as Sean mentioned, he is now 3 times his financial freedom number. How do you figure out your financial freedom number? You can download our free cheat sheet. We'll have a link below that you can grab it. Or if you're just driving, you don't want to write it down, you can just go to morrisinvest.com/freedom and download the free cheat sheet right there. And you can walk you through step by step how to figure out your financial freedom number, how many rental properties it will take for you to achieve financial freedom. Now, thank you guys so much for subscribing and taking action. And like Sean said, massive imperfect action and no more analysis paralysis. So until next time, everyone, go out there, take action, become a real estate investor. I believe it's the number one way to build wealth. We'll see you next time.